he is available to be consumed any number of places here, as well as his Twitter page, twitter.com/IamBenLyons. And we will forgive what the image is on there here tonight. It is, of course, LeBron in a Knicks jersey, and it says where 2010 happens. But given that other teams have beaten the Knicks at their own game of hollowing out the salary cap here at this point in time, it has to be very disheartening for him for that to have happened, particularly with everything that's gone on in the last week. So we'll take it easy on him here tonight. I speak, of course, of the gentleman who we have let know is our favorite film critic out there. I speak, of course, of the one and only Ben Lyons. Ben, welcome back to the lounge here tonight. How are you, my man?
Thanks, man. What an introduction. Really appreciate it. And I'm just doing my part on my Twitter page with my LeBron photo on there, which is getting a lot of hits, of course. But hey, man, it seems like in the last week or so, you and I are in the same boat. We've taken a back seat to teams like Chicago and Miami, which seems to be on the tip of everybody's tongue. So it'll be really, really interesting how it plays out in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it is going to be. And we have in the next segment here, I know you can't stick around from the note that I got here, but I will be sure to pass on any thoughts from you to Evan Roberts, because he and I are going to be doing nothing but breaking it down. He is taking the Nets point of view. I'll tell you what, I don't think it looks good for you as a Knicks fan. It looks a whole lot better than it does for Evan as a Nets fan.
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't want to see the Knicks overcompensate because they miss out on the big prize. And that's something that they've kind of done in years past and seems like what could possibly happen here. This is really an unprecedented moment for the NBA with LeBron and now Melo in talks of possibly being traded. And you've got even great role players who are better than role players, even a guy like Rudy Gay. And you know, I saw today that Solomon's from Milwaukee opted out of his deal. So everybody's looking to jump ship. What has not been really talked about at all, and this is probably definitely not going to happen, but it's interesting to think about. LeBron, Bosh, and D-Wade had this big powwow down in Miami. These guys could do something to change the face of the sport around the world. LeBron's, what, 24 years old? He went to Europe for 2 years, 3 years, played in Germany, played in Spain somewhere, made the sport internationally grow beyond simply never before since the Dream Team. He'd come back to the States and be 26 years old, 27 years old, prime of his career if he still really wanted to win an illustrious NBA championship.
Yeah,
why not go to Europe?
Very possibly.
Make a ton of money.
You know, that could be an option if you wanted to just chase it in the short term here. You know, you mentioned some of the interesting consolation prizes out there as well. A name that you mentioned, and I believe he's a restricted free agent, but I've long been a big believer in Rudy Gay. Thought it was just criminal for Houston to have given him away for nothing more than Shane Battier, who admittedly fit into their system pretty well. But somebody with the upside of a Rudy Gay only starting to come into his own. I used to describe myself, because I was so enamored of his game, I used to describe myself as a big Gay Mark, and then I realized the connotations of that, Ben, and how unfortunate that could be.
You know, it's these kind of guys, though, that you put a team around, put around a guy like LeBron. And, you know, I was watching the NBA Finals this year, and I couldn't help but think to myself, boy, Celtics could really use a guy like James Posey. Remember they had him a couple years ago? Like, they need that kind of swing defensive guy to hit a big three. Maybe they missed that Eddie House, that spark plug off the bench, maybe getting some big threes in crunch time. So I think it's also about the big stars, of course, and that's what everyone's excited to see. But you got to put those role players around it. And where the Knicks seem to always falter is they pay the role players star money. I don't want to see them give Joe Johnson, who's not a role player, he's a good, solid player, but I don't think he's a great player. It's a guy who his last seven games was a ghost in the playoffs, the last seven they lost. I really want to see, I want to see the Knicks pay the right people the right money, if that makes sense.
If you're looking for somebody to be a ghost in the playoffs, we could trade you Mo Williams as a consolation prize.
He's another guy, too, who's a good number two, number three type player. If you were a free agent this year, I wouldn't want to see the Knicks give you, overpay someone like that. A perfect example of someone who, and I think that's the problem with Cleveland as well, is that you guys try to bring in people like Antoine Jameson and Shaq to fill in the gaps around LeBron, and they're just the wrong guys to bring in.
They bury guys like Booby Gibson for no reason, apparently. I know his defense isn't the greatest, but geez, I mean, gunners don't grow on trees. I've been saying that guy's a poor man's Ben Gordon for a while now, and some way, someday, somebody's finally going to believe me on that. But, you know, it's really interesting because you've got this week here, you know, July 1st is so huge, but then also, you know, of course, basketball being your passion, Ben, but as far as your day job goes, really, really funny that almost at the same point in time here, a red letter day, the very same week here, the Twilight Eclipse open, and it looks like it's going to be record numbers out there for this thing.
You know, I once had the privilege of interviewing Jerry Bruckheimer, who's a producer, knows a lot about summer movie season. And I said, what is it about the summer movie season that makes all you producers want the biggest movies with the biggest stars? He goes, hey, the kids are out of school. And when nothing was more applicable to than to the Twilight franchise, because it is geared to such a young audience, and these teenage girls are going to go 4 or 5 times this weekend, and their mothers are now going 4 or 5 times this weekend. And the numbers last night came in today. They did something like $30 million in midnight screenings, beating their previous record in New Moon, which was around $26 or $27 million. So with the kids out of school, as Mr. Bruckheimer says, I think anything could happen for Twilight this over the next few days.
You know, you've got that, and it's funny because we talked about it earlier on the show here tonight too, that you've got the next month, which is pretty much the dead zone for the world in terms of sports, but also, you know, I think pop culture as well. July, you start to get into August, it's just so sleepy. I mean, even in August, you got NFL training camp going on, but not a whole lot else, especially in non-Olympic years, which every 3 out of 4 are, of course. So how much does summer and the whole sleepy kind of, you know, type thing have to do with it here? There ain't a whole lot going on. You're not really competing with important world events or sports championships or anything like that.
No, the kids are out of school. It is, as they get towards August, they do say the dog days of August. However, this year, the first half of the summer, we've been blessed with the World Cup, and it's been such a treat to watch some of the finest athletes in the world from countries you don't get to see play all the time. And as we get down to the later rounds now, the quality of play is just so strong. And it's been interesting to see how the summer movie business has kind of hiccuped a little bit. And I don't know if it's in relation to the World Cup, but you've had a lot of films kind of underperform this summer. And I don't think it's going to affect Twilight at all. But you're right, all the movies now are kind of clearing a path for the next 2-3 weeks because this Twilight thing is a beast, man. While you and I might not be huge fans of the actual films or have read the books, or I am fans of the fans. I appreciate the passion. They're incredible on Twitter. They showed up at the premiere the other night at LA Live, 3,000 people outside of Staples Center. Some of them camping out, coming from all over the world. So that enthusiasm, that ravenous appetite for pop culture does then spread, you know, make everything else a little thin because it seems the whole world is watching this vampire and werewolf love story.
What did it end up being when you saw it, when you went in to see it, and clearly from the previous movies and you know the tracks had been laid down, you obviously must have had some preconceptions here as far as where this was going, past experiences with the movies, but how did it develop as you were watching it? What were some of the things that were pleasant surprises for you in terms of this thing, and maybe some, if any, that were less than pleasant?
Well, first of all, I do feel like a third wheel on a date between the Twilight fans who live and die with the characters and the movie itself. I kind of feel like the uninvited chaperone when I'm sitting there in the theater. I know it's not for me. I'm not a fan of the actual films. But I think as far as this film goes, something positive to take away from it, the action sequences are bigger than we've seen from any of the other films. They're higher level of execution on them. They look great. Special effects in the past have really taken me out of the first Twilight and even the second one at times, but here they look really strong. And I think it's the first time that all three leads, Kristen Stewart, Rob Pattinson, and Taylor Lautner, are really comfortable in their roles, and they're even winking to the audience a little bit. There's a line in the movie where Rob says about Taylor's character, boy, does he ever put a shirt on? And Taylor's character looks to the audience almost at one point and says, like, I'm hotter than he is. Like, they're having fun with this kind of media sensationalism that is surrounded the three of them and their dynamic. So, and it's a little tongue-in-cheek this time around, but I think hardcore fans of Twilight are going to be really happy. This is for them. They love the characters. They love the dynamic between them, and they love seeing them on screen, so they're going to go over and over again. But for me, like I said, I felt like the old guy in the club. I got to be honest. I don't really enjoy these movies.
I'm with you on that, Ben. It ain't exactly aimed at our demographic, but you know, different strokes for different folks, and all of that. Something that might be aimed a little bit more at us, I would say, is this this grown-ups movie here. And what's really kind of interesting and striking to me is that it's not necessarily maybe the first Adam Sandler movie that's aimed at a more middle-aged demographic, but it's at least one of the first ones. He's played the family man in some roles previously here, but this almost had the feel to me of almost sort of like settling into the next stage of the career, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
You know, his audience is growing up. I remember when I was only, you know, I was 12 or 13 when Billy Madison and those movies came out. And now people my age are settling down and having kids and can relate to the experience. And I feel like some of the family movies he's done in the past where he's played a family man are just that. They're family movies. You think Bedtime Stories or even something like Spanglish, which was for a different audience. But, you know, the film really performed well last weekend, something like $40 million. So he can still deliver at the box office. But I just didn't find it funny. And maybe it is because I'm getting old. I thought it missed the mark. It was trying to maybe market itself like it was a family movie and for the kids too, and it's definitely not. But even for older audiences, the humor seems kind of lowest common denominator. And I think when we've been blessed the last couple of years with sharp comedies that are raunchy, but things like Superbad and Hangover and I Love You Man and Role Models and Knocked Up, we've seen a lot of great comedies the last few years. Hot Tub Time Machine was really funny. I think we kind of expect more, and especially when Sandler's getting up with Chris Rock and David Spade and all his buddies, it just kind of looked like an excuse for them to go hang out in the woods together instead of really make a funny movie.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've heard. I haven't seen it, but I've heard that it had the feel of something that they could have done more with it if it was a little bit more developed. Having said that, and again, I haven't really gotten a chance to see very much.
Hey, it's kind of like Ocean's 11, but for comedians. They're all friends. They all get to go do a movie together. Ocean's guys, it's a heist movie, and they can all wear suits and be slick in Vegas. For Sandler and his buddies, it's sitting around the barbecue, drinking beers, and telling stories. It's the same deal.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we could pop in an Entourage DVD, you know, if we wanted to just see, you know, the Hollywood life and guys sitting around and enjoying it, you know. I mean, that would be, which by the way, and I don't mean that to speak dismissively of that. I will tell you this by the way, just for what it's worth, Ben, because I don't have HBO, so I missed last season of that. It took me less than 48 hours to make it through the new season of Entourage there.
The shows are so short. I wish they were an hour. I mean, I enjoy them, but right when I'm getting into them, boom, they play the latest new hip-hop song, and it cuts to the credits, you know? So I always am left wanting more, which I guess is a good thing. But, yeah, I wish those shows were longer.
Oh, exactly. Another movie I wanted to ask you about as far as hearsay that I've been getting nothing but positive hearsay on the A-Team here and what it did and really kind of going in and redefining that. And apparently just some of the actors doing such a tremendous job. It seems like it would be such a tremendous challenge to take these roles and make them their own. And I understand that that's what a lot of people feel Bradley Cooper and everybody managed to do.
Whether it's the folks in the A-Team or even getting back to the Twilight Kids, you're always starting with source material, whether it's an 80s TV show or a book that's really popular. That's why it's very rare in Hollywood now when you see an idea start from beginning to end and it's completely original. And I saw a movie recently called Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio that really stood out to me as something that's not based on a graphic novel or a comic book or a popular TV show or a remake of an old film. It's just directed for Christopher Nolan, taking big filmmaking to another place and really creating something special. I had such a good time. I look forward to that coming out for everybody. I think it's July 15th. But back to the A-Team. For me, I don't know, man. It just was like shaky camera, knockoff Paul Greengrass style shooting. I got it that it represented the 80s franchise authentically. Hardcore A-Team fans are saying, yeah, it felt like the A-Team. But I don't know. B.A. Baracus is always going to be Mr. T to me. I'm not going to buy Rampage Jackson in that role for one moment.
Yeah, it would seem like that would be pretty challenging to believe. We might be losing you there. I don't know. Ben, can you still hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Good. That's the important thing, as long as you can hear us. I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that about B.A. Baracus. We were talking about that You know, as I was going through editing some old shows recently and cutting up some different clips, I came to something that you and I were talking about previously, I think probably when you were on in March, as far as characters that cause actors to get typecast to where it's kind of hard for them to break these chains as they go to move on to other roles. And that's not always necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes you can do similar characters and at the very least maybe make a lot of money while you're doing it, playing versions of the same guy. But as you're going through this summer movie season here, are there any actors out there that you see kind of getting caught up in this pattern recently here of maybe playing just very similar variations of the same character time after time and continuing to do so?
If you look at a movie like Dinner for Schmucks, which I'm going to see next weekend, that's the one where Paul Rudd and Steve Carell are paired together. You know, Paul Rudd's done movies the last few years where he's paired opposite Jason Segel in I Love You, Man. He's paired opposite Sean William Scott in Role Models, and those are both good movies, and they did very well. But now, has he gone to the well like one too many times, pairing up with now Steve Carell? And he's kind of worked with every big comedian. So Paul Rudd is somebody maybe, is he at the top of his game and continuing to work? Yeah, but if you're looking at something like, okay, maybe he's done that a few too many times. But maybe, you know, he's also really good at it. So that's the thing, is Hollywood's a double-edged sword. They want to see you do things you're good at, but at the same time, there's always this feeling of, okay, we've seen you do that already. Let's switch it up a little bit. Now you see a guy like Mark Wahlberg, who is in a movie called The Other Guys with Will Ferrell. First time Wahlberg's been a lead in a comedy himself. He had a supporting role in Date Night, and he was in the I Heart Huckabees, which is an ensemble weird little movie. But for him, first time it's his first big comedy role. So he's breaking outside of his brooding actor we've seen recently in The Lovely Bones or the action star in Max Payne and things like that, or Shooter. And then getting back to typecasting, look at the Twilight kids. You know, for Kristen Stewart, during this whole Twilight run, she's made Adventureland, Welcome to the Rileys, The Runaways. She's worked on lots of independent films to try to continue to work and break out, keep audiences guessing of what she's going to do on screen next and not just always be Bella Swan from Twilight. Taylor Lautner, on the other hand, has really become a star this go-around and has now just embraced the Jacob role and wants to do action movies and take that Twilight audience with him to the action world. Signed on to play Stretch Armstrong. He's in another movie called Abduction, an action film. So, you know, and a guy like Rob Pattinson does a movie like Remember Me, another romantic film, the leading man in that. So he continues to, you know, take on this Edward Cullen persona, but this time he's executive producing, which he did. So everybody attacks it differently, but those three kids in Twilight, yeah, they're going to have to worry about being forever looked at as Jacob, Taylor, Edward, and Bella.
Yeah, well, you know, go ask the guys in Star Wars what that was like, huh? You know, because that can be a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing at the very least financially, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. They always say, hey, it's not show friends, it's show business. You get those Star Wars checks for the rest of your life, it's all good to be Luke Skywalker.
Oh, it is. It definitely is. Ben, like I said, we always love to give everybody a chance to get to plug everything. So you got your stuff going on E! Online with the Lion's Den, of course, E! On television on a regular basis with the film reviews. Anything at all that you want to plug, that you want to get out there, please be my guest.
I would like to plug the 2010-2011 playoff contenders, New York Knicks. The Knicks will be back in the playoffs next year, no matter if they score LeBron, Wade, Bosch, all of them, none of them. Whatever they do, there's nowhere to go but up. I think you're going to see them back in the playoffs, which is good for the city of New York. So that's what I'm plugging. Thanks for that.
You're going to be saying that if it's six-year max contracts to Joe Johnson and Paul Pierce?
Hey, if it's Joe Johnson and Amari Stoudemire, then we're the Suns in 2005 without Nash. That's good for a seventh seed, right? Back in the playoffs. Just give me that.
Well, hey, they'll fit in perfect. They know how to do that D'Antoni 140-139 style, don't they?
Hey, good luck in the offseason with LeBron and whatever team he ends up on. You know, may they enjoy and appreciate what they're about to witness, because it's something special.
It definitely is. It definitely is. And, Ben, I know we're hoping to get you in for our fantasy football draft in August.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sounds good. Sign me up.
Awesome. Awesome. Bring any of your friends with you. This is as competitive as it gets, and we're going to have a lot of fun with it.
I love it. I love being a part of it and love your guys' enthusiasm for sports and movies and the whole thing. So thanks for having me.
We love having you, Ben. You fit in perfectly with us. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon, my man.
All right. Peace, buddy.
All right. Take care, buddy. Ben Lyons, the great Ben Lyons, our friend from E! Entertainment.